Classical music today, its relevance to a 21st century audience. Most people have heard of Bach and Beethoven, but how many contemporary classical composers do you know? John Williams, maybe, for his movie scores? Anyone else? There are indeed many amazing classical composers working today, their scores performed by symphonies and chorales and influencing other genres of music. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will meet one of them. Robert Keir is in Maine for a performance of his work, Cloud of Unknowing. Keir says this work is a deep personal response to the horrific violence of our age. Is classical music still relevant? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The music you just heard is a composition by Robert Keir, who's in our studio today, and it featured the voice of soprano Esteli Gomez, who is also here with us. How do you do that? Wow, that is a contemporary composition. People often think all classical music is hundreds of years old and don't realize that an abundance of exciting, innovative classical music is being composed and perform today. And that is the subject of our program, How Classical Music Maintains Its Relevance and Resonance in Our Modern World. Well, joining me in the studio today, Emily Isaacson, who is Artistic Director of the Oratorio Chorale, as well as a conductor, singer, and music educator. She is also founder and artistic director of the Portland Bach Experience. Robert Keir is an American composer. His work, The Cloud of Unknowing, will be performed by the Oratorio Chorale this weekend in Maine. He's also a writer, filmmaker, and professor of composition and theory at the University of Oregon School of Music. And Esteli Gomez is a Grammy-winning soprano who will be performing Robert Keir's work. And she also tours with the contemporary octet, A Room Full of Teeth. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you attend classical music performances? Have you heard contemporary compositions performed? And what do you think of them? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to welcome all of our guests. Before we turn to you, though, we have our own Charles Beck on the line. Charles is Maine Public's VP for content for both radio and television. And actually, Charles, we learned today one of your undergraduate degrees is in music. You have hosted classical music in various jobs, whether it's as a host or as a program director, for almost 40 years. And Charles, I just wanted to start by asking you, what is the state of classical music on public radio, and how has it changed in the time that you've been involved?
Hi, Jen. Thanks. Thanks for having me on for a few moments here. Classical music basically is doing wonderfully, I think, in the public radio system. We've seen over the years many commercial stations going other ways to rock or what have you, but public radio now, I think, is starting to own the classical music format. And while the audiences aren't quite as large as the news audiences, it's a very loyal audience listening for more hours and certainly willing to support it. And, of course, with the public radio format, you're able to, you know, have more in-depth programming, so to speak, and better connections with the community and really spend the best time putting together a program that works for the audience. So, really, it's doing great, and the audiences have been holding steady nationwide over the last 4 or 5 years for classical music on public radio.
Why did Maine Public create Maine Public Classical? Surely we wouldn't have done that if we thought classical music was dead.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because this is one of my favorite stories to tell. You know, for years and years here at Maine Public Radio, when we offered what we call a mixed format, offering both news and classical music, we would get one complaint 1 minute saying not enough classical music, the next minute someone saying exactly the opposite, everyone wanting more of this or less of that, and this at different times. And certainly for the classical music audience, we got down to the point where we were basically, with the strong appetite for public radio news, we were only offering, you know, morning classical music 3 hours during our daytime day parts, not enough for really folks to count on each and every day. And our news listeners as well. We had delayed broadcasts. We weren't offering the best programs that were in the system. And our audience growth started to reflect all of this. It started slowing and leveling off. With technology today, people want what they want, when they want. And we knew that to be a vibrant service, we had to follow that trend. And so we created Maine Public Classical to better fulfill what our classical music listeners want, and also on Maine Public Radio to better provide the news, the journalism that's so important in this day and age.
Charles, I'm guessing that expanding classical music to a 24-hour channel from the 3 hours in the morning gives more space for different kinds of classical music. Is that true? Is there room now for more contemporary composers and full symphonies and things like that?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're just starting to get underway with Maine Public Classical. So much more to come. We're offering perhaps the, you know, most notable programs in the system, from Pipe Dreams to the opera. But we always keep in mind how diverse our audience is. On the one extreme, you've got folks who are listening because they just want, and I don't mean this in the wrong way, but pretty music in the background, to perhaps on the other extreme, folks sitting by the radio with a score that know the composer and know the work and the various interpretations. And the challenge for us is how to serve everybody. And so Robin Rylette, who hosts Morning Classical Music, has a real demanding job in terms of balancing all that. And we have different day parts. You know, we have the evening concert with symphonies. A Mahler symphony first thing in the morning might not be the best idea. And we have to keep all that in mind. But yes, I think I'm kind of going around the long way to answer your question, is that...
Charles, one of our guests here, Emily Isaacson, wants to ask you a question. Go ahead, Emily.
Well, I was actually going to make a comment about how the really unique and wonderful role that I think public radio has in the classical music landscape in the 21st century. Because of the internet, you can listen to the Kamakura radio on the internet any hour of the day. You can listen to any music anytime. And I think what's really unique and wonderful is what radio stations like Maine Classical, WQXR, with Nadia Sorrento in New York, and Minnesota Public Radio, they're doing really unique programming around either interviewing Meet the Composer or talking intimately with Grammy winners like Esteli, finding out how do they train, how do you think about this music, period instruments, and giving listeners background so that when they then approach, whether it's a contemporary piece or a classical piece, they, one, have more information about it, but also it's living, it's alive, it's connected to people, places, stories, a time. And I think that makes the whole experience more enriching.
Charles, are we going to bring Emily on board here to do some marketing for us? Charles.
Absolutely.
Charles,
so if I could just add, you know, we've started doing more and more of that. Robin is having interviews with various performers and conductors, music directors from around the state. And we also know that we're able to provide not just the music. I mean, you can hear a Haydn symphony in so many different places, but bring those connections to Maine to life and connect the arts organizations with our listeners, with us. It's kind of a win-win situation, and that's what we're striving to do.
Robert.
I just wanted to say bravo to the people of Maine for supporting this. This is incredible that the state is in support of this kind of effort, that there's a listenership here and there's such interest. And I've noticed that the audience is here and the entire contemporary community for performance not only of new music but of many different kinds of music is so strong and so vital. And I know that radio has a very important part to play in that effort to sustain that over time. So thanks to the people of Maine and thanks to this station for doing so much to make that a reality.
Charles, thanks so much for letting us call you and have you help us start the program today.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, everybody.
And I want to start with you all in the studio with kind of the big question. I'm just going to throw it out there. What is the state of classical music in 2018? I'll start with you, Emily. You're a conductor of works, new and old, an educator, a performer. What do you think? Do you worry that classical music is losing its audience, or do you see vitality?
No, I don't worry at all. In fact, I'm not just hopeful, I see it happening and I'm really excited. I think one of Esteli and I are part of a generation of musicians that have been trained classically, but are really sort of pushing the exteriors of what, quote, classical music means. And I think that that is in some ways hearkening back to an earlier time period. If you think about the composers that we know of, especially think of Bach or Handel or Purcell, they were writing for courts, they were writing for chapels, for religious services, but they were often writing for parties. You know, a lot of Bach's music was heard in they were called coffee houses, but they were really bar halls, and that's where people were mixing and mingling and getting to know one another. Purcell's ode, or not the odes, the semi-operas, were things that were performed for entertainment when they didn't have Netflix. And so I think one of the really cool things is that when music started to be performed more often, well, let me just take us on a tiny journey. So that was happening during the Baroque period. During Mozart's time, we were in a court sometimes, but also sometimes in a concert hall, but with mead and beer and lots of alcohol and rowdy audiences involved. And then in the Romantic period, if you think about Schubert's salons, Schubert would have these big parties with poets. And again, alcohol seems to be a common thread here. But they were really social events. Mendelssohn would have these great garden parties where he performed a lot of his work. And it wasn't really until the late 20th century, 1890s-ish, with Mahler, who really said, no, this is a concert. We have to sit quietly. Don't clap between movements. You know, we have to be very poised about this. And Rob, you fill in, because I'm probably messing up my history ever so slightly. But as a short-term version, that's sort of it. And one of the things that I love about classical music today and about our generation of musicians is we are bringing quote-unquote classical music into alternative spaces. Esteli has performed with Kanye West and Nico Muhly and like a bunch of other contemporary composers. We're taking the classical music aesthetic and we're pushing it into, you know, some people call it crossover, but I really think we're just playing with art. Like, what does this sound like in a folk sphere? What does this sound like in an electric sphere, in a rock and roll sphere? And I think that that is bringing more people, both changing up the experience in the venue and also the kind of music, is bringing more people into the circle of quote unquote classical music.
Esteli?
Yeah, I think it's really changed a lot with the advent of the internet and just the capacity for musicians to have a community that is larger than our geographic region. So rather than having to, I mean, I often compare music and food, and rather than having to only have a certain kind of cuisine if you are able monetarily and physically to get to that country, we have fusion is not quite the right word, but we have a kind of broadening of the genre in classical music, especially I have seen in my work. So,
all right, go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, and that fusion is very broad and began really in the 20th century. In some sense, it began with the relationship between East and West. For example, it's developed now so that we have an entire movement of gamelan music, Southeast Asian percussion music, not only in the universities, but also in communities. And I actually direct a Balinese gamelan, which I've done since 1992. And that gamelan has created about 500 pieces since that time, which are a fusion of Eastern and Western culture and music. And that kind of fusion is also very important because it speaks to a global movement to bring different cultures together through music as an art that connects people at a profound level.
Is it challenging to bring people to do music? I think that even in, you know, even in pop music, we hear the same artists over and over, and new ideas take a while to take hold. I can only imagine in your world to have people open their minds, more people, more audience. Is there a way of approaching people that seems to work?
I think reaching to people where they live, what matters to them most. So now, for example, in concert music, we have works that actually are dealing with major contemporary issues. For example, in my own case, I had projects within the last decade that relate to violence in the cities, the bombing of Nagasaki and weapons of mass destruction, living in harmony with nature and the environment, and using music as a way of reaching people internally in a way that no other art form really can, especially when music is a combination of text and sound. That powerful connection reaches people internally and opens them up to new possibilities and ultimately to new possibilities of action, ways that they can live in the world.
I was going to say, I read on your website that you believe choral music specifically can play a role in peacemaking.
Absolutely. Just think of what a chorus really is. In essence, it's bringing together a community of people who come from many different backgrounds. And in a way, it's a kind of model for what we would like to see in society right now, because our society is so divided. But just imagine a chorus bringing people from all different kinds of backgrounds, no matter what differences they might have, how different they might be from each other. And here they are coming together to make music, to create harmony together. And that then serves as an opportunity to get to know each other better and then to reach out to their communities and beyond their communities through recording and other means to extend that message.
Estelle, you've performed as a soloist and with choral groups. What is the difference for you?
Well, I always say that there's no such thing as a soloist, just because, I mean, unless you're going to watch a soprano do a solo recital just in the middle of a room randomly somewhere, it's always going to be a collaboration. So whether collaborating with other voices or with instruments, I definitely, there's such a joy to be found and human connection to be found and the spirit of breathing with other people. Whether they're then going to be using their vocal instruments or instruments that they play. I completely agree with Rob that it has a lot to do with sort of the kernels of what we're searching for right now in our country. And so I'm really proud to be a part of this art form.
And let me ask you, what is it like to be performing new works that have not been performed before, as opposed to performing things that have been being performed for hundreds of years and you already have it in the back of your mind what it sounds like?
I definitely, I grew up hearing a lot of different kinds of music. My parents met in a folk and bluegrass group in San Francisco in the 70s. I have a family of very musical people, and I didn't grow up with very much classical music. So in some senses, I didn't have the same kind of sense of how something should be, how everybody have done things before. And so that's not to say that I don't certainly have a background now in having listened to a lot of music in the classical genre. But that is to say that something new to me is always going to be fresh and ready for a different interpretation, whether it's something that has been sung thousands of times or if it's something that I've collaborated with a composer on and has been written specifically for me.
We do have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Robert Keir about the work, The Cloud of Unknowing. We'll play some clips and talk about those. And we're also going to hear a little bit as we go to break.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does New England Cancer Specialists, committed to leading the way to better outcomes for 50 years. More at newenglandcancerspecialists.org.
I'm Mary Jo Heath. Join me for Il Trovatore, Verdi's drama of passion, loyalty, and an implacable vendetta. It stars Jennifer Rowley, Anita Rochvelashvili, Yonghun Lee, and Quinn Kelsey. Marco Armiliato conducts this thrilling score. Il Trovatore, Saturday, live on the Toll Brothers Metropolitan Opera International Radio Network.
That's tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock on Maine Public Classical. Mark Vogelzang, President and CEO of Maine Public, will be at Eggs and Issues next Thursday morning at 7 o'clock for a talk on why independent journalism matters. The Portland Region Chamber of Commerce's Eggs and Issues series takes place at the Holiday Inn by the Bay. Mark will talk about the state of public radio and television today, the strategic decision to increase deeper, in-depth reporting at Maine Public, and the role of NPR and PBS in the era of fake news. If you aren't a Portland Chamber member, you can attend and receive a special Chamber member price for the event. Please visit mainepublic.org and click on events for all the details.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the relevance of classical music today. With me in the studio, three people who are instrumental in bringing together an upcoming performance by the Oratorio Chorale. Robert Keir is a composer. His work, The Cloud of Unknowing, will be performed by the Oratorio Chorale this weekend in Portland and Brunswick. And Esteli Gomez is a Grammy Award-winning soprano who will be performing the work. And Emily Isaacson is here. She's Artistic Director of the Oratorio Chorale. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to audience questions, though, I want to talk about this work, since we're so lucky to have you in the studio with us, Rob. Tell me about this. Tell me about how you got the idea for this work, The Cloud of Unknowing.
Well, actually, it started with its companion work, Songs of the Soul, which I co-created with the chorus Conspirare, and Craig Kelly Johnson, which is a Grammy-winning chorus from Austin, Texas. And it came out of a festival that we did, Renaissance and Response. And in that particular piece, each of the choral movements is a response to a composer that we love from the Renaissance and Baroque, Josquin des Prez and Lassus Victoria, and then in the Baroque period, J.S. Bach. And the text is by St. John of the Cross. And as I did some more research about St. John of the Cross, I found out that his spiritual superior was St. Teresa of Avila. And in fact, she helped him to form his spirituality in very profound ways. So I thought I would write a companion work for that work. That is The Cloud of Unknowing, which focuses on the relationship between human love and divine love. And I'll share with you now that I'm interfaith, so I celebrate with all people of all religions, as long as they're love-based religions. And so the spiritual theme of love and also compassion and forgiveness, those three are very important to me, and I've written quite a few works related to those themes. And this piece comes directly out of those interests and my commitment to offering through music a way of exploring those themes. Which I hope this work does, especially right now. We're, of course, in challenging times with a lot of division in the country and other challenges. I think music has a very special role to play in the healing of our country and in our own individual healing. There's, of course, a lot of violence at the moment in the country as well, as we see. But I hope this work connects people to something inside of them that inspires that will to do something that is hopeful, that leads us forward, that connects us to each other in a primary way. And that then relates to our own spiritual path. And that could be many different kinds of paths for different people. But how can we be more unified and connected through our own spiritual path as individuals and people?
Rob, you've selected three clips to play for us. The first is from your part two, Songs of the Dawn, Thinking. Tell us what to listen for here.
Yes, well, I'd just like to read a little bit of the text. It starts, "How shall I think about the one? I have no idea. And what is the one? I don't know. However, you may reach the one and hold it close through love, but never through thinking. Find the one by loving the one. And what I tried to do is come from inside of that text and bring it to life through the music.
And that's St. Teresa of Avila?
That is actually from The Cloud of Unknowing, which is a text by an anonymous 14th century monk about contemplation and focusing on the nature of love and then becoming more loving through that pathway of focus and intention.
Rob, the next clip we're going to hear is also from Songs of Dawn, but this is Beseeching.
Yes, and we've chosen the clips because each of the three clips we're going to play is in a different language. And one of my ideas in the work was to create a relationship, a dynamic relationship between these languages and to set the text in their original form. This particular movement is in Castellano, which is a version of Spanish, 16th century Spanish. And this particular movement, I'll read a bit of the text. It starts with a question. I am yours. I was born for you. What do you wish to make of me? Give me death, give me life, give me health or sickness, give me honor or dishonor, give me war or full-grown peace. Sweet life, unveiled sun, I have left all behind. There's a set of opposites that are presented that eventually, through the contemplation of those opposites, the listener or the one who is taking this journey concludes that there's something beyond it all that sustains it, a sense of unity and the life force itself. And that is directed toward the light.
Go ahead, Emily.
One of the reasons I love Rob's music, and there I could speak for an hour about just that subject alone, but his music is what I think of as very environmental, in that in addition to being extremely spiritual and connected to the text and moving, I'm transported. It's like a slideshow. I feel like my ears and brain are transported to these moments. And I love how this piece juxtaposes those images for me. So the first selection that we heard for me is sort of a modern interpretation of Gregorian chant if it were sung by all the sexes in the 21st century. And this movement, I spent 3 weeks hiking across Spain, and I am flooded with the memories of that trip and those monasteries, those churches, when I hear this music. And this last selection has yet another image. So it's a real journey we get to go on.
I should also, and I have to at this moment, acknowledge my beloved colleague, Esteli Gomez, and that was her singing on the recording, and David Farwig of the baritone, and you'll hear both of them in the performances this weekend.
Rob, what is it like to hear what you've written come to life in a voice like Esteli's?
Well, I feel that I'm the luckiest composer in the world, creating music, actually co-creating music with Esteli Gomez, because she actually helped to teach me the Spanish that I learned, as did David Farwig. Both of them are Spanish speakers. And so there's an element of co-creation in the work, which I love. I always try to weave that into anything that I'm composing, working directly with performers and others, writers and others in collaboration.
Will we hear Astley's voice in the third track?
Yes, we will, at the very beginning. In fact, you're going to hear her alone at the beginning.
Estelle, your voice is so astonishingly beautiful. I just want to ask how you do that, but I know that the answer is magic, and so they're really
and a lot of hard work for all those young musicians
so
out there.
So many degrees.
Estelle is one of the smartest musicians I know, which I think really is part of what makes your instrument so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Well, I certainly I have worked hard to be able to. I kind of think of it as athleticism. It's definitely a tightrope walk to be a high soprano. And but Rob writes so beautifully for the voice, and so I feel very lucky that he's brought these texts to life in such a way.
Well, we have listeners who've been waiting a long time to join the conversation. We'll start with Les, who's calling from Alna. Hi, Les. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Great.
Good. Well, you got to know, and you already do, that I'm not a musician. I'm just the enabler-in-chief for the DuPonte String Quartet. And I emailed you earlier, and do you know how extraordinary it is? 2 years ago, Down East Magazine named us the best music group in Maine. And this is a classical string quartet. Do you know what that says about Maine? It wouldn't happen anywhere else. This is an absolutely, this is a sophisticated rural place. And we have people who move here precisely because of that sophistication. We are an economic engine. And I love the music, but I love more what it does to our culture, how it enriches us. And that's what you guys do, you know, and I just enable.
Les, I'm so glad, this is Emily, that you brought that up. So I'm also the director and conductor of the Portland Bach Experience. And that's really in conjunction with what you just said. This is a community of intelligent, cultured people who are seeking to experience new opportunities to enrich themselves and to grow every minute of their life. And I think that music provides a lot of opportunities for that. And as part of the Portland Bach Experience, the goal is to create listening, but also learning and participating opportunities, and to bring some out-of-staters in to be a part of that. But DuPonte has been a role model for that model for a long time.
Les, thanks for calling in. We have an email from Brian. Thanks for taking up the cause of living composers and contemporary classical music. It's something we think about all the time at the Bangor Symphony Orchestra. From my perspective, it is all about exposure. It should be beyond question that composers are writing music that's relevant to life today. Of course they are. We just need to get it heard. This past weekend, the BSO performed a work by Connie Ellisor, a contemporary composer working out of Nashville. An audience is really connected with it, and we're clearly proud to connect with it. The assumption is almost that they won't like it because it's new, and we're glad to challenge that assumption successfully. And I do think that that assumption is out there. You're nodding, Emily.
Yeah. Schoenberg and Webern, some of the early 20th music century composers, I think did incredible things for music as a whole, but in some ways a disservice to a certain population, in that it's totally different than Mozart and Bach. It's not a melody and Rob, you teach this stuff, so you should jump in here. But I think people assume that when they hear new music, it's going to hurt their ears and they're not going to enjoy it and they're going to grin and
it's going to be dissonant and there's going to be cacophony. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. you know, this concert, we programmed it, coupling it with Fauré's Requiem, because Fauré's Requiem is something that lots of people know and love, and it's a great piece and they should come. But The Cure is what they're going to walk away with. Like, this piece is so melodic and transportive, and all the things that the Fauré does well, The Cure does amazingly. And so I think that exposure is a really, really great point. And but I think it's also finding ways to connect the audience through something familiar to something new to make them feel comfortable and welcome.
All right, guess what? We have to take another break. But before we do so, a word about Monday's program. We're going to talk about historic preservation efforts in Maine and how they boost our state's culture and economy. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You are listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Rehabilitation Center at the Cedars, safely transitioning over 800 seniors home each year. Learn more at thecedarsportland.org.
Hi, Toby here. For years now, I've played along with all this new technology. CDs were actually a good thing, but then we went online, the internet thing, and went streaming instead of broadcasting. Okay, then we went to that invisible HD something network. Finally, of course, and this is a really a good thing, the Maine Public Classical Network came along, over the air, FM radio, the way it should be. So that's fine, but now there are these new smart things as well. Google this, and Anita someone, who plays whatever you might want them to. Really? I don't know. But however you hear Maine Public Radio or Maine Public Classical, just remember to join me for Down Memory Lane, Friday afternoons at 2, on the straightforward Maine Public Classical channel.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program, How Classical Music Speaks to Modern Audiences. Joining me today, Esteli Gomez, who's a Grammy-winning soprano, Emily Isaacson with the Oratorio Chorale, and Robert Keir, who's a composer, writer, filmmaker, and professor. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Esteli, I understand you're a Baroque specialist, but you also sing new and contemporary music. You mentioned that you've worked with, did you say Kendrick Lamar?
Kanye West.
Kanye West, okay. Well, you know.
Next season.
Oh, gosh. In my dreams.
But what is the connection between the two? How difficult is it to do both?
Well, I think that there are a lot of people, especially musicians today, who are doing early music and new music, kind of in a lot of different kind of settings. And I think that it's the genres within the genre of classical music are extremely interconnected. Both allow for a lot of interpretation from the artist. So, for example, in early music, which is kind of considered 18th century and before, there was so much that was expected of a person called a musician, but also, especially in my little corner of that, a singer was expected to be such an interpreter, to look at what was written down and be able to say so many things about that were not necessarily on the page. How it's going to sound, how loud or soft it is. The articulation, whether it's smooth or choppy, all of those things. There was an expectation of singers at that time that there would just be interpreters, and so they would have a lot of their own creative say. And that is definitely true in new music as well. Composers are not necessarily as prescriptive when they know that the singer is going to be seeing the score and will be able to say, oh, I think I might prefer it this way. I think I might like to try this passage in this way. So I think a lot of interpreters of early and new music end up finding homes in both of those places. Some of the sort of middle portion of music tends to be prescriptive in terms of what's written on the page for the musician as an interpreter.
Interesting. We're going to go to Bonnie, who's calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Bonnie. Go ahead.
Hello, and I'm honored and delighted. I've been blown away by the music. I'm a member of the Baha'i Faith, and the Prophet Founder in 1844 said that music is the sustenance of the soul. And I just love that. And our little choral society has been, not choral society, our Yarmouth choir, chorus, I'm excited, has been singing at different nursing homes. And it's just amazing to me how they light up to our music, whatever we're singing. My grandson, who plays piano and saxophone and trumpet, or a lot of instruments, he was subject to tantrums when he was little, and if we just put on music, the whole mood changed. And I want to say how lovely it was. I miss Charles' voice. It warms my heart, and I wish he could teach us classes or something in any subject. I hope I can get to Brunswick to hear, and I'm not going to say her name.
Estelle.
Spell it for me.
E-S-T-E-L-I.
Like the star she is.
Bonnie, thanks so much for calling. But I think she brings up a really good point, and we're learning a lot more about the transformative power of music. I have a friend, who Kate Beaver, who's a wonderful music therapist, and she does phenomenal work with people who have had brain injuries and children with disabilities, and as Bonnie mentioned, older people with Alzheimer's. It touches a part of our brain that is hard to access otherwise, doesn't it?
Yeah, one of my missions in life as a musician is to create listening opportunities so that people can experience music on that really sort of primitive spiritual level. I think that there are moments where the class, concert experience is totally appropriate, and you want to be in a concert for this weekend's concert. Sit down, pay attention. There's so much going on. You just want to sit and absorb it. But I think there are other moments where creating an atmosphere, I'm doing a yoga concert later this season, or where you're outside and referencing music, where you can feel it as more of your holistic being. And it helps people bring it back to that soul spirit part of music, which I think is in many ways really connected to music therapy.
Rob, when you're composing, are you thinking of people sitting in an auditorium listening to your music, or are you thinking about it differently?
Well, what I like to say is we're all in the circle. So the composer, performers, everybody who has anything to do with that performance, the volunteers for the organization, the administration, and then everyone who's listening, not only in that moment, but anybody who will ever listen. So I like to actually think of music holistically that way. When I'm composing, I'm thinking of everything related to the piece, everybody being in the circle, and creating it for all of them, and to bring people together. That's really my intention in creating each piece, and hopefully to offering music as a force for healing in the world.
Bonnie, thanks for your call. We'll go to Tom, who's calling from Rockland. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering whether the composer who's on the panel today, is he sort of upset that a lot of works are not becoming standard works in the repertoire? It seems that they are performed, and after a couple of performances, they're lost. Do you see that as a problem for composers?
Well, I'm both concerned and not concerned. I'll say not concerned first, because if we look at other eras of music, we see that, for example, in the case of Bach, his music took quite a long time to become part of our repertoire. And that could be said about other composers as well. For example, Mozart saw a period where his music was done much less and then more often during other periods. And composers come and go over time. So in that sense, I think the music that reaches us the most deeply is the music that lasts over time and is the strongest in our repertoire. However, I'm concerned in that works do need the kind of attention that would give those that do reach us the longevity that they deserve. And so that's up to the conductors. And
I was going to punt it. I was going to punt it to the audience, actually, because when I'm programming a season, I have to take into account what's going to sell tickets. And often, as we discussed earlier, people are nervous about new music. And I think that the more the audience says, you know, one of the things that I think new music does more than music that we know is it forces us to be in this moment. Put down your cell phone. Don't think about the laundry list. Like, be here. Be with us. Because you have no idea what's going to happen. And that's true of all performing arts, but especially things that were written recently. And I think the more that the audience says, we love that experience. We want more of that. I would program this every season if I got the chance.
Tom, thanks so much for the question. We have an email from Bob. I'm more of a fan of classical music, including Baroque and Renaissance, and not that familiar with contemporary. If the piece being done today is any indication, I might get more interested. So in addition to Robert Keir, who else would you recommend for somebody who wants to start listening to contemporary composers? Rob, who do you listen to? Who are you really excited about?
Well, I listen to a very wide range of music, and I'm atypical because, for example, I direct an international composer symposium, the Oregon Bach Festival Composer Symposium, and I bring together 90 to 100 composers every 2 years. And I hear all of their music, and I have to say I love all of their music. It's a very, very wide range of style and idea, and it's a real adventure.
So who would you suggest maybe who's accessible to someone who's really used to Baroque music, for
I think
example.
If you are coming from that background, I would say Arvo Pärt, P-A-R-T, and over that A is an umlaut. But there are other composers as well who I think you would be well worth exploring. I'd recommend that you explore them. For example, if you don't know the works of Messiaen, Olivier Messiaen, M-E-S-S-I-A-E-N, Toru Takemitsu, T-O-R-U, and then T-A-K-E-M-I-T-S-U. Those are just to name a few, and there are many others as well. There's such a wide range today of contemporary composers who are worth listening to, and you can find them easily by doing various searches. And sometimes if you find something you really like, look down at the bottom of your Google search, and you'll see people who have been searching that composer have also been looking at these other composers, and you might try them as well.
Emily's dying to jump in.
Well, Esteli, love Arvo Pärt, but he's pretty old
at this point.
And we, Esteli and I'd love to talk about some of our friends and their 30s. The New York Times did a listening series or article by Nico Muhly, who Esteli is singing with at Carnegie Hall in 2 weeks.
Less than a week. a week from yesterday.
Nico Muhly is such a great gateway drug. He is steeped in the music of the Renaissance and the English church choir music. He also plays with Grizzly Bear and Bjork and does a lot of like contemporary pop music. He was one of the youngest people to be commissioned for an opera by the Met. He is so dynamic and beautiful. And he wrote these great articles for the New York Times about sort of the connection between new music and Renaissance. So I would suggest that.
Yeah, and then I have to put in a plug for one of my best friends, Caroline Shaw, who is the youngest musician to win the Pulitzer Prize for music, which was for a piece she wrote for Roomful of Teeth, which is our band. And that piece was called Partita for Eight Voices. So if you're looking for something that definitely has
partita
a lot...
Partita being a Baroque word.
Yes,
Baroque
partita,
style.
Yeah, dances. Yeah. So the Partita for Eight Voices, which was on Roomful of Teeth's first album, is definitely a very tonal exploration of some exciting contemporary music.
Well, I've written these all down, and I'm going to put them on our Facebook page. And thank you all for being here so much. You just heard the voice of Esteli Gomez, a Grammy-winning soprano who also tours with the contemporary octet A Roomful of Teeth, Robert Keir, a composer, writer, filmmaker, and professor, and Emily Isaacson, artistic director of the Oratorial Chorale. We've also put information about this weekend's performance on our Facebook page and our webpage. Monday on the program, the impact of historic preservation in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling.